It's the technology phone in. So if you're having trouble with your tech or if gadgets leave you grinding your teeth, then we can help. Now, when I say we, I don't actually mean me because I know nothing whatsoever about technology. But I do have an expert with me. Gadget from gadgetdetective.com. Say that again. Gadgetdetective.com. Fevzi Turkalp is here to help. Good morning to you, Fevzi.
Morning, Faye.
Thank you very much for all your expertise. We don't know what we'd do without you. The number to call if you've got a question, 08085 909 693. Calls are free from mobiles and landline. You can text us, 85058, text are charged at your standard message rate. You can also email us at upallnight@bbc.co.uk, or, of course, you can tweet us at bbc.co.uk. And also, if you want to tweet Fevzi, it's at Gadget Detective. That's correct, is it, Fevzi?
It is, yeah.
Wonderful.
At Gadget Detective, if you've got a question, plug it through. If you just want to come and say hello, as I've pointed out before, actually, I don't have any friends, so that's the nearest I get to any sort of social interaction. So please, at Gadget Detective on Twitter.
Please don't let Fevzi get lonely. Please tweet him.
Too late.
Okay, we've got a question here from Jace, who says, long time listener, first time texter. Thank you for your text, Jace. He says, my partner has a Samsung laptop, roughly around 4 years old. She's not used it for a while, and when we did come to use it, we plugged the charging cable in, as obviously the battery would be flat, but no lights show up at all, not even the one stating that it was charging. We left it for an hour, still no lights, and won't turn on. Would you say that it's requiring a new battery, or would something else be at fault?
It's not necessarily a new battery. It's rather unfortunate. I mean, even if the battery were to be dead, it should still allow you to use it with the mains power plugged in. So as it's charging, it should be able to draw sufficient current, even if the battery is completely dead, to do that. So that would tend to suggest that there's a fault that might go beyond the battery itself. Perhaps a power connection going to the motherboard, something like that, because you would expect to see a charging light. Even if the actual light was dead and the battery was dead, you should still expect it to start up on mains power, but it's not doing that. So my advice is, obviously I'm assuming this is out of warranty, my advice is to take it to a local repairer and speak to them on the basis that if they can diagnose it for you and tell you what's likely to be wrong and give you a fixed price for fixing it. In order to do that, they'll need to diagnose it and tell you what they think the problem is in the first instance. But you want to have an agreement where if they don't fix it, you don't pay them. Then you need to think about, you know, how much you should pay towards the fix. What's the maximum you should pay before you say, okay, it's 4 years old, I'm going to cut my losses and put that towards a new machine. I'd start getting uncomfortable at around £100. Sort of if it started to go beyond that. I think again, and the reason why I say that, unless there's data on there that you absolutely have to get off, if it's just the value of the machine, that even if that particular fault is repaired, and even if they warranty that repair, there's nothing to say that something else won't go wrong with it as well. And normally, if they warranty a repair, it would be for, you know, 3 months typically, something like that. So you've got to be a bit careful about throwing good hard cash at a four-year-old machine.
Lots of questions coming in for you. Numbers to call, 08085 909 693. You can text 85058 or you can tweet us at BBC5Live. I always like to ask this question, this sort of question, Fevzi, early on, so that if you don't know the answer, I know that you're going to have time to go and find out the answer. So we'll start with, this is from Steve in Doncaster. Steve says, does Fevzi know of a good wind-up DAB radio? If you don't worry. The news and sport is coming up and you can go and find one.
Wind up DAB. I'm sorry, is that a wind up?
Have I missed the point? I have, haven't I?
No, it's just a joke. It's a bad joke. All right, I'll check it out. They're up. They're,
it's 25 past two in the morning. Come on, give me a chance.
Actually, I don't know. There are various FM and AM, but... I've never heard of a wind-up DAB.
Maybe this is a wind-up that I've just walked straight into.
No,
an actual wind-up.
No,
they're
I
all
don't
nodding
think so.
Behind the screen and laughing. God, I'm going to move on quickly. The AJ in York says, love the show, so I hope you can help. Thank you, AJ. I have an old Windows laptop, 4 years old with good spec, but want to give it a boost by fitting an SSD. I did the free upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10. So how would I put Windows 10 onto the new hard drive? I have no Windows disk.
Okay, so you've got to, so just to maybe just explain that question. So this is an aging laptop. It means it's got a traditional hard drive in it, which has got a rotating platter inside, which means it's capacious but slow by modern standards. And the thing to do is to replace it with a solid state drive. That's to say an SSD. It's a drive that does the same as a hard drive, but it doesn't have any moving parts. That means it's quicker and also particularly good in laptops because it means it draws less energy, which means the battery life lasts longer. Also, it will generate less heat as well, which will mean it will run quieter because the fans won't kick in as often. So it's a sort of win-win-win-win. Oh, and by the way, if you drop it, it's more likely to survive than some laptop with a rotating hard drive. So in terms of now putting Windows onto the new drive, there are two approaches that you can take. You could either clone the original hard drive, that's to say make a bit perfect copy, bit by bit by bit, copied from the hard drive onto the SSD. And to do that, you can use a variety of tools. I would recommend tools from a company called Acronis, which is spelled Acronis. They do various backup tools as well, so it's quite useful because not only can you do that bit perfect copy, but you can continue to use it for backing up your data as you use the machine. So that's one approach. The advantage of that approach is that it's very quick compared to the other approach because everything with a bit perfect copy should just work as it was working before. The other alternative is to rebuild the hard drive from scratch. By that I mean you install the Windows operating system, then you install your apps one by one, then you update everything, then you transfer your data. That's a pain, and if you want to do it that way, you can...
Sounds long-winded.
Yeah, it can give you a slightly more stable outcome. Yeah, the bit perfect copies sometimes are not quite as stable. So it depends. If you're kind of old school about it, you'll do the installing the Windows and then the thing. The other advantage of doing the bit perfect copy is that you don't then have to worry about reinstalling Windows. It will just be, you know, a copy of an installation that's already been done. However, if you want to go the second route and you've got the time and the energy to go that route, then you can download Windows again from the Microsoft website. You go to support section of the website, you can download Windows 10 and it will be legal because you'll already have a valid license because you upgraded, I think you said, from Windows 7 to Windows 10. So all you need to do is download it again and it will work, and it might ask you for your license credentials, but you'll be able to do that. So That's what I would do. I personally would go the second approach if you think you can stand it. But the interesting thing is, the first step of the second approach would be to do a clone copy of the drive in the first place, just in case it goes wrong. You've got a copy of it that you can always reinstate.
Okay, we've got a question from Terry in Newbury in Berkshire. Terry, you're going old school on us, aren't you?
Good morning, Fair. Good morning, Febsy.
Morning, Terry.
I'm not a gremlin. I'm a dinosaur.
Welcome.
I'm 75, but I'm digital nearly.
Okay.
My mini display is packed in. I've had it for 15 years.
Yeah.
I bought it in Singapore.
Yes.
Not knowing that they were going extinct then.
No.
So I don't know where to go. I haven't got a computer, Febsy, so I can't Google or whatever to shop around. I need to replace it, otherwise I've got 300 mini discs I cannot play.
Ah,
yeah. And more to the point,
I converted them from cassettes. It took me years.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Oh, so Terry, bless you.
So you're after a new player?
Yeah, or worst, a second-hand one.
Yes, well, I think that's what we're looking at, because I think Sony, who invented the mini-disc format, stopped manufacturing. I'm actually looking at two mini-disc players as we speak. But
don't rub it in, Febsy.
You can't have one of these, I'm sorry. So look, just for those that don't know, mini-discs were these tiny little discs. They look like small floppy discs for those that are old enough to remember that.
Fantastic.
And they had some of the benefits of CD in that you could jump around to different tracks on it once you'd recorded it.
ULP as well, long play. Compression is the word.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you could do with that is also you could record on it and you could edit it on the actual disc.
Yep.
And very, very popular in radio studios, by the way, it used to be. I mean,
Betsy, I was told in Singapore in this music shop that Sonny invented it.
Yeah.
And they wanted all the record companies to adopt it, but Sonny wanted too much money. That's what I was told.
Yeah, what
so
it was.
They stuck to CDs.
Yeah, because Minidisc use a compression technique called A-track, A-T-R-A-C, not 8-track, A-T-R-A-C, which was their proprietary equivalent of MP3. This is before MP3 players and so forth became popular. Yeah. But because it was proprietary, that means that they had to pay Sony a license fee to make the machines and to make the discs and everything else. And Sony kind of never learned their lesson because they got beaten on Betamax and also on Minidisc as well. So it's a fine system. So the best place where you can buy these, the easiest place, and you will need some help with this, is that well-known auction website, eBay.
Hey, man, I haven't got a computer.
Yeah, I know, but you might want
to. I was thinking about writing to snail mail, but I didn't know whether to write to Manchester or to London.
Do you know anyone, Terry, who can help you get onto eBay or who may have an eBay account?
Well,
family or friends?
They're pretty reluctant, to sort of do a quick Google and all that. Well, they might be thinking, well, buy your own computer,
Oh, I'm sure they wouldn't.
And actually, public libraries as well. Sorry, Terry, I interrupted. I was just going to say public libraries as well would be helpful because they also have schemes.
I'm pretty housebound in as well.
Right. Oh, dear.
I can't play any music.
No, I understand. Let's just deal with the websites first of all. I know it's hard for you to get to. So eBay is the place where you'll find most of them. If you don't want to be creating accounts and setting all that, then there is a website called Gumtree, Gumtree.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Again, if you could get someone to come round with a laptop or a tablet or a smartphone, they could look it up on there and find ones for sale in your area, and they are ubiquitous. And the thing is, they're cheap as chips as well. I mean, you can pick one up sometimes for about £20 now.
Well, that's what I was thinking, maybe £50. But I don't particularly want £50, but if that's the only option, then well.
Yeah, but they do tend to age quite well. I mean, they don't wear out.
I've had 15 years out of this, so it's not too bad.
Oh, Terry, I wish I still had mine, and I would have posted it to you. But I have to say, I think I threw mine about 5 years ago. But I loved them as well. I'm with you, Terry. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. But
a lot of musicians still use them on stage and all that, for backup music and all that.
They are still used, but they are very much on the way out, and it's getting harder to find the discs themselves as well. I mean, Terry, looking a bit into the future with this, what I'd also say to you is that you're going to need to get these recordings. If they're prized recordings, you're going to need to get them off those discs and onto another format of some sort. I mean, are these pieces of music only, and are they music that you'd be able to sort of access, elsewhere? So, for example,
about going back to vinyl, but the people got vinyl now, they're the wise ones, aren't they?
It's funny because last year there was more vinyl was sold than CDs.
We're going backwards, Terry. There is hope after all.
I'd say I don't see any progress with computers and all that. And I've been involved with computers going back to 1960 odd, Febsey.
What about getting in touch with your local radio station, Terry? Could you try doing that and see? I mean, I know that sometimes there are cupboards full of old kit that journalists don't use anymore. Maybe if they had an old mini disc, you could, give your radio station a call and see if they could.
Radio Berkshire.
Give BBC Radio Berkshire a call and see what they say. Maybe that's a worthwhile try. Okay, so we're going to get...
It's a good idea.
It is difficult, isn't it? Sometimes the internet connects you, sometimes it completely cuts you off. And in Terry's...
Yeah, it is a shame, really, because it's pretty much like a utility now. The people don't either have access or don't have the skills to access, browsers and so forth, really suffer. They end up paying more for services. They end up not being able to, buy and replace things. What I was going to say to Terry was that it depends what those recordings are, really. If they are prized recordings that can't be purchased or accessed by another means, then he's going to need to think about getting those transferred. Yeah. Because even if he gets another player, what happens when that one dies and they're even scarcer?
Yep.
So, but if it's a music collection, then, you know, there are lots of services like, you know, Apple Music and Amazon Prime and so forth that offer streamable music, and that might be a sort of another approach.
Mm.
Failing that, and if you can't get hold of it, there are companies that will copy all those mini discs off one format and put it into another format, maybe a CD and a digital file or something like that.
Terry, who we just had on, who was looking for a replacement mini disc player, he was going old school, was struggling really, wasn't he? Because he can't use the internet, doesn't have access to the internet, and wanted to try and get hold of another. We suggested getting in touch with his local BBC radio station. Matt in Devon has been on. He says, I still use mini disc at the radio station I work at in Devon. Love the mini disc, says Matt. So
yeah,
there is hope. If there are radio stations out there, local radio stations for Terry who may have old mini disc players that they're not using anymore, you never know. So I can't think of any other way really that he can get around that.
Well, I mean, I could do you know what, if we can get Terry's details, I think I can, and his location, I can probably identify one for him in the area and see if they can sort of set something up. It's a bit difficult because I think Terry also mentioned that he doesn't leave home very often as well.
No, so, yeah, he was housebound. So let's see if the guys through the window can get hold of Terry again and try and get an address for him, and we'll see what we can do. Let's move on to some other questions then. Christina in Coatbridge says, what items are automatically backed up from a smartphone? My husband lost his mobile and got it all restored apart from the contacts. Why shouldn't they have come back?
It depends how what software you're using to do the backup. The thing that's most commonly missing from a smartphone backup are text messages, and also any instant messages can sometimes be lost as well, but particularly text messages, because they are kind of independent of the data structure that's set up by the manufacturer or the producer of the operating system. So that's what you often lose, and that's a real pain. If it's unusual for contacts to be missed, because that, you know, that's normally a part of it. If the contacts were stored, for example, on a SIM card as opposed to on the internal memory of the phone, that can sometimes lead to the loss of contacts. Failing that, you need to look at how the backup is done and what tool you're using. So the manufacturer will typically provide a backup tool, and if you don't have that, you can go to the support part of the manufacturer's website. So if it's Samsung, for example, go there. That will often give you what you need. If there are still aspects missing and you need to back up on a sort of ongoing basis, for the more popular smartphones, you often find software backup tools from third-party companies that will do a better job of it. So often, you know, these third parties, they'll step in and do you know, a better product than the manufacturer does. So it's going to take a bit of research, but it's unusual for contacts to be missing, so you might just also want to check that you know, that wasn't deliberately excluded, that there isn't a setting within the backup software to actually exclude that,
but all is not necessarily lost.
If you've still got access to the machine, no, not all necessarily lost, because you can back up again and then try and reinstate it to another machine. If you've no longer got access to the data and it hasn't backed up, then obviously that's then more of a problem. It's a real pain. I mean, sometimes even when you do a backup, it's hard to get the backup in a form that can be reinstated to a different phone, and particularly if it's a different type of phone. And often people end up, you know, having to enter stuff again manually, and, you know, that can be a horrendous task to do. So it's one of the reasons actually why people often buy the same sort of phone again, because it makes transferring the data easier. The only other thing I would say to you is not strictly a backup, but when you do buy a new phone, for example, Apple now do a tool that allows you to suck up sort of data from an Android smartphone and put it into Apple format. So that can be useful as well. So you can look out for those sort of import tools as well.
Mm. Okay, let's go to a question on Twitter from Keith Canton. Keith says, what's the best way to encrypt an Android phone download? Oh, sorry. What's the best way to encrypt an Android phone? Download an app or use preloaded manufacturer's software?
I would tend to download a trusted app to do it, and to encrypt it. Well, I mean, you can use something such as a PGP, which stands for Pretty Good Privacy, that can do encryption. So for those that don't know, this is the scrambling of data in such a way that if someone accesses that data file, they can access it, but they can't read it. To them, it seems to be gobbledygook. So I would use a sort of PGP-based solution, and there are a variety of apps that you can download on various formats, so you can get it running on a PC or the smartphone itself to do encryption. Some backup routines automatically give you the option to backup. So let's say you've got an iPhone and you plug it into iTunes. By default, it will back up every time you plug the phone in using a USB cable to Lightning cable. It will do a backup. And in the settings for iTunes is an option to say back this up in encrypted form. So you might find that actually your backup software already includes an encryption option. So it's worth checking that as well.
Okay, we've also got another question from Simon in Doncaster. Simon says, is there a way of boosting your Wi-Fi signal? We've just put a garden room up for the kids and they're not happy. No signal.
Yeah.
Sure, you build a garden room for the kids and they're not happy because they can't get a Wi-Fi signal. That's no, gratitude
nothing like
for you,
going
Simon.
Back to nature in the garden room, yeah. I suppose. So, yes, there are different ways of boosting a Wi-Fi signal. So Wi-Fi being wireless, a form of wireless internet, like all other wireless forms, has a range. And once you get to the edge of that range, the performance of the Wi-Fi slows down. It becomes slower and then intermittent and then stops altogether. So there are various solutions that you could potentially employ. There are things called Wi-Fi boosters or Wi-Fi repeaters. And you plug them in to the last mains power point you can on the way out to the garden as well. So let's say your Wi-Fi router is towards the front of the house and you need to access Wi-Fi in the back garden, then what you can do is plug a repeater in the sort of backmost room of your house. And what that does is, as the name implies, you it picks up the Wi-Fi data signal flying each way and it boosts it and passes it on. So it's a bit like playing sort of Chinese whispers. It listens and then repeats, and hopefully repeats accurately, unlike Chinese whispers. There are some other options. If, for example, you need Wi-Fi in a room where there is a mains socket, but the router is not there and it's far away from the router, then what you can do is buy a pair of what are called home plug units, HOME. Space PLUG, that's the sort of generic name for them. Different brands like D-Link and Netgear and you know, many brands that do that. And what that does is it passes the internet signal through your mains wiring, your domestic mains power wiring. And then when it pops up the other end, you get a home plug, which either allows you to plug in an Ethernet cable into it, or some of them then create the Wi-Fi signal in that room, i.e. the remote location. So you can kind of cheat, use the mains wiring so you don't have to wire up your house with Ethernet cables. And then at the far end, you know, coming out of the main socket is this device that then creates a new Wi-Fi hotspot in that area. And that tends to work quite well. That's quite a good solution if you need to use it for watching television, for example, because with TV, if it's just email and so forth, it doesn't matter if the Wi-Fi signal is a little bit intermittent because it's not time critical. But with watching TV, and particularly high definition TVs programs over things like Netflix, that's not best done over Wi-Fi in any way. So a good solution to that would be to use something like a home plug unit.
Okay, I hope that helps you, Simon, and your demanding children who aren't happy with the Wi-Fi in their garden room. Charlie in West London, this sounds like a bit of an urgent one, says, is there a way to recover an accidentally deleted note in iPhone post the recovery period? There's nothing worse is than when you realise that you've deleted it by mistake and you realise too late to go back into the deleted items.
Yeah. So Charlie, yeah, you're right, because with iPhones, it will tend to delete things and then depending on your settings, it will keep them for a period just in case, just to guard against this eventuality. The possibility is that you might have a backup of it elsewhere. So as I mentioned earlier, iPhones by default, when you plug them into a PC, if you have the iTunes software installed, will automatically do a backup. So it may be that you've got a version of the backup on your PC, be it Windows or Mac, in fact, that has that on there. Beyond that, there are data recovery specialists that could potentially get it, but it depends, because once
how important it is, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, and also it may not even be available at that point, because once something is deleted, although it's not physically deleted, the entry to it is deleted, and that means that area of memory is then available to store something else. And if something else has been physically written over it in that part of the memory, then it's going to be all but impossible to recover. So I think your best bet and most economic bet would be to search your PC to see if you've got backup that might have it. But, you know, unfortunately, it's not going to be very easy beyond that. If it depends on the importance, many things are recoverable if you have enough resources to throw at it, but sometimes even not then, but it gets very expensive.
Okay.
To have to do that.
Okay, let's go to Silver now. Silver is in Merseyside. Silver, yes, how can Fevzi help?
Oh, cheers, thanks very much. Fevzi, about 3 or 4 weeks ago you were talking about a little speaker that you could ask information from it and it would give you back.
Yes, yeah, Amazon Echoes, yes.
What was it called? I just caught you at the end. I've listened to you on and off for years, Fevzi, and I thought, hang on, he's on. So you don't mind, I really take your program, so there's information that I might use or friends might use if they have problems with the gear.
Oh, so bless yourself.
I followed you from the days of Talk Sport.
Well, we won't go into that.
I mean,
we all have our past. Here,
what was it called?
I think the ones that we're referring to. So these are generically known as smart speakers. That's the sort of name. But I think the ones that I were discussing, we were playing with, was the Amazon Echo.
A little Diddy one. It came out a couple of years ago and they were too big and I said no. I wanted the one you had was about a couple of inches, was it?
Yeah.
And you could, you know, just blow it through to a Bluetooth speaker, whatever if you wanted, you know, a tune. Sure. I'm a musician, so I want to use it for music, you know what I mean? So I can.
Let me run through your options, Silver, because there's a number of options. So the Amazon Echo was launched in the States about 3 years ago, but it came to the UK about a year ago. Currently in the UK, there are two versions, and there are more on the way, but the two versions that exist today are called the Amazon Echo, which is the full-size unit. So imagine a half-used kitchen roll standing up on its end. Yes, that's the sort of dimensions of it, yeah? Choice of black and white colours, and it's got a built-in high-quality speaker in it, but it's mono speaker, yeah? So you mentioned music. Bear in mind, it's mono. The alternative is the Amazon, and the full price of that is, I think, £150. I saw it for £80 the other day. Yeah, that's the big one. So the little one is called the Amazon Echo Dot. Its functionality in terms of its intelligence is the same as the Echo. In my experience, the Wi-Fi on it is not quite as solid, so sometimes it drops the Wi-Fi. And the speaker in it, because that one is only, as you say, about 2 inches tall, the speaker in it is okay for listening to Alexa's voice. Alexa is the name of the artificial intelligence that lives in it. And we say that and everyone's Alexa has now woken up, and I apologise for that. Just be grateful
I haven't... You have a pair of Bluetooth speakers, bigger ones, couldn't you?
Yeah. So what's interesting is, and the differences are these, the small unit, the Echo Dot, actually, in addition to being able to connect a pair of Bluetooth speakers, also has a 3.5mm stereo output jack.
Okay.
So you can just run a wire into a pair of speakers or into a, you know, you might have a sort of old hi-fi even with a spare line level input or an auxiliary input.
Yeah.
And you could run it into that and run it through a really nice pair of speakers if you happen to have it. The Echo, the full-size unit, has no 3.5mm or any other sort of physical output. And in fact, up until the last software update, you couldn't even connect a pair of Wi-Fi speakers.
So really, the smaller one's better, isn't it?
Well, Well, now you can connect via Wi-Fi. So my advice is this. If you're happy to connect your external speakers by Wi-Fi and don't need or don't want to connect via a wire, then the Echo...
I prefer to connect by Bluetooth.
So if you prefer to connect by Bluetooth, then I would say go for the Echo, because the built-in speaker is better and the Wi-Fi reception on it is more solid in my experience. And when I look at the specs, there are also differences in the specs on the Wi-Fi. They're subtle but can explain the difference. So I would go for that. Bear in mind, there are two new Echo devices that are on the way. One of them has a built-in camera and is to be used. I find this, I think it's not me that finds this a little bit creepy. It's meant to be used in the bedroom, and what you're meant to do is put your clothes on.
Oh, you're going into a whole
You know what? Sometimes you think you know someone and then you just see the way their mind goes. If you let me finish, babe. the idea behind it is it's got artificial intelligence built into it. So when you don your latest outfit and parade around
in front of it. You've told me about this before and it does freak me out.
Yeah, it does. It's meant to tell you whether what you're wearing goes and whether it's fashionable. And that artificial intelligence is based on its own artificial intelligence plus the opinions of experts programmed into it. So
it's
I find that a bit freakish, isn't it?
You know, that's going to do nothing for your confidence.
It is. It's a bit like having recipes developed by computers that have no sense of taste. IBM's Watson program, which is an artificial intelligence program, comes up with these really weird recipes that no one else, no human would ever have thought of. But actually, some of them are really quite good. So, but the other one that's coming along, Silver, is one with a screen on it, which is I think it's called the Echo Show. And the benefit of that is not a touch screen, but the benefit is, let's say, for example, you speak and to the Echo and you say, you know, tell me what the weather is like. It will show you the weather forecast on the screen as well as speak it to you.
Okay.
Similarly, if you want to watch a YouTube video, you can actually pull it up on the screen and see it then. That's in the US. It's not here yet. It will come at some point, but there's no date announced for it.
I can't imagine anyone wanting to ask a computer if their bum looks big in this, can you? I just can't imagine that one taking off at all.
Well, you know, the other thing is, I mean, it takes the selfie one step further, because not only does it take snaps, it will take video clips as well. So you can give it a twirl and view it back. But you can view
it
back yourself.
I'd love to see you do that, Fevzy. Give it a twirl.
Yeah, well, I was doing it just in the break, but that thing where you have to crane your neck as you're turning round?
Mm.
Well, you don't have to do that anymore, because it gives you a video clip that you can then watch and decide whether it's any good to you. So, that's an early application, but there's no doubt that the new devices will have cameras and will have screens, because voice is a great way of interacting, but actually to get information back, sometimes it's good to be able to see in summary form on a screen as well.
So not only can they hear us, but they can now see us as well.
Yes, don't be freaked. Everything
you know
everything
me, Fevzy, it always
everything
happens.
Everything is fine. Take your Soma and it will be fine.
Let's ask you one last question before we go to the news. Alan in Northumbria. Can I get more channels on FreeSat than FreeView, says Alan?
You know, it changes a bit. I think last time I looked, there were a few extras, but essentially you should view FreeSat as being an alternative to FreeView, not one better than the other. It's usually you choose FreeSat when you can't get a good FreeView signal. By the way, if you used to have a Sky subscription, your satellite's still up, that's pointing in the right direction for FreeSat. So you can just buy a box from somewhere like, Humax, even if your TV doesn't support it. And then you can have FreeSat access that way for, less than £100, I think.
Sam in Worcester says, I have an external HDD for my MacBook computer. How can I password protect this? I already have files on it. Can I do it without wiping the HDD?
So you can password protect it by using a third-party application. We mentioned Acronis, for example, to something that will encrypt an entire hard drive or an individual disk. Bear in mind that Windows itself, versions of Windows, have software in it called BitLocker, which will also encrypt files. Although there have been reports that there, because because of the NSA's interest in Microsoft and its data, that some people feel that that may not be completely secure. So, you know, you may want to go for a third-party solution such as Acronis, but you could, if your version of Windows has BitLocker, that you could try and use that and see how well you get on with that as well.
Another question from Ray in Chelsea. Ray says, I have an EE TV service and get on my main TV and my tablet, but the sound to the tablet's out of sync. How can I sync the tablet to the TV sound? There's nothing more irritating is than watching somebody speaking completely out of sync.
Yeah, so this problem can be for a variety of reasons. It could be how it's actually being broadcast to you over the internet, in which case there might not be much you can do about it other than resetting your router and resetting your machinery to make sure.
But turn off and turn on again.
Well, yeah, it can be the case, but it can also be to do with the way that your machinery works, that it takes a different amount of time to process the audio than it does the video to decode it and show it or present it to the speakers. So sometimes it can be an intractable problem. But I would also speak to EE about it to see if it's a known issue and if they have any fixes for it themselves. But it's not unusual, and it's you know, one of the problems with sort of syncing audio and video, it can happen.
Okay, Dan's also texted. Dan says, two questions. A music song is about 4 megabytes and a CD is 750 megabytes. What I can't understand is why you can only get about 18 songs on a CD.
Okay, so that's...
Should we deal with that aspect first?
Yeah, so that's to do with compression. So on a CD, the music is uncompressed. It's stored as a WAV file, WAV, and that means that none of the data is squished. It's down there in a pure form, and that has the benefit of providing you with, you know, good quality. If you listen to an MP3 file, typically speaking, that might have only take up about a tenth of the space of the same music as stored on a CD. And the reason for that is because they use compression. They use techniques to squish the data down. Some of the data they actually throw away and your brain doesn't notice it, or doesn't notice it very much. And therefore, you know, when memory was as a real premium, you know, in devices, compression was really important. These days, you're starting to see streaming services and other services crop up with, you know, full uncompressed audio. But, you know, that's the reason why they throw away. We mentioned A-Track, for example, the other time, and about 80% of the data is actually thrown away when you compress it. And they use a field of science called psychoacoustics, where it's not just working out what the ear can hear, but also noticing what the brain won't notice is missing.
We've still got several questions. We've got about 10 minutes left of the technology phone-in.
Can I just jump in with one answer? Because there was a question about the wind-up DAB radios.
Oh, sure, you found an answer.
Well, yeah, and I've come at it a slightly different way. So I've had a bit of time to have a look.
Good.
I find no currently sold wind-up DAB radios, and also, so there are wind-up radios, but they tend to be AM and FM, and they tend to be not the best radios. You know, the main feature is the wind-up, and the radio itself seems to suffer in quality. The second thing is that the cranks are tiny, they're going to break off, and they're not going to generate a lot of electricity. A better way to go at this is to buy a DAB radio that you really like, that it can be charged via a USB or a micro USB socket, so it doesn't have a sort of special charger for it that only works with that it will work off any USB charger like the one that you use on your mobile phone, for example. So you get one of those and you get a much wider choice of that. You then buy a hand crank wind unit, so a hand crank charger, yeah, and there are lots of those available. So what you do is it's like, it looks like the old crank on the old-fashioned cars, it's that sort of thing, yeah, but albeit a little bit smaller, and the cable that comes out of that plugs into the micro USB socket on your phone or your DAB radio, whatever else. So it has the benefit of, first of all, it can charge a variety of devices, not just that one. Secondly, it's more robust and it will produce more electricity as well, and you get a complete, you know, wide range of choice. So you get it, you can buy a decent DAB radio as well. You can use it to charge your phone, certain types of camera, the DAB radio. Just choose the ones that are chargeable from micro USB.
Okay. Now I'm getting a little lost. Dan, who texted us with two questions. Did we get on to Dan's second question? I don't think we did we? He said, I formatted my SD card thinking it was much like defragging a hard drive. Did we do that?
No,
I didn't think so. Okay, so we did the first part of the question, which was about the a song being about 4 megabytes and a CD 750 megabytes.
So we said it was down to compression. Yeah,
yes, okay. We've sorted that one. So the second part, I didn't want to miss Dan's second part. I formatted my SD card thinking it was much like defragging a hard drive, but I seem to have lost everything on my SD card. Have I killed my SD card, says Dan.
Okay, so... Maybe, but it may be recoverable. So formatting is not the same as defragging. Formatting is another word for wiping. Okay,
oh, dear.
So you format when you want to wipe it and have an empty card. So but this comes back to what we're saying before. When you format a drive, you're not physically overwriting every bit of information. What you're doing is wiping the index. If you think of it like a book, it's the equivalent of tearing the index pages out of the book. The main pages are still in the book, but just much harder to find now because the index is gone. And that's what you're doing when you format it. You're rewriting or blanking out the index. So there is a piece of free software that you can download called Recuva. It's spelled R-E-C-U-V-A. You can download it free from filehippo.com as well as other places as well, but that's a trusted website. Be careful not to click on the ads, and they'll hate me for saying this, but you know, they have these sort of ads that look like you should be clicking on them because they sort of con you into that. yeah, you think you're clicking on the bit you need to, and then suddenly you're in an ad. So just have your wits about you. But you know, they have to make their money from somewhere because it's a free hosting site for useful software. So that's called filehippo.com, all one word. Download Recuva. Do not try and use that device, don't put that card until you come to recover it. Don't put it in any reader. Don't try and write anything else to it, because there's a danger that because that space has now been marked as being available, if you were to continue using it, then files would be then physically overwritten by new files. So you need to not use it any further and see what you can recover. There's also another application called Get Data Back. But that's a paid for app, although there's a free version of it that will show you what it can recover, if anything, and then they expect you to pay for it to recover it. But Recuva, with an A on the end, is a free app.
There you go, Dan. Hope that helps. Stuart in Leicester, another question for you, says, I need a laptop just for word processing. Can you recommend one, perhaps without having to buy Windows? Stuart in Leicester.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to buy Windows, I mean Windows is you know not a very expensive addition to a machine, and it has a number of benefits because of the range and ubiquity of the software that's available for Windows. So don't dismiss it too easily. If you want to have a laptop that's not running Windows, then the cheapest way to do that is to buy what's called a Chromebook. So that is that's an operating system made by Google, which is very much like the Chrome browser, which is used to access web pages. So with that, everything is accessed as an app running within the browser, including a word processor. The problem with them is that they have limited or sometimes no functionality without an internet connection, because they're very much a sort of web-connected device. Some Chromebooks do give you basic functionality even offline, but they're very basic. The other alternative is you could get an old laptop and when I say old, I mean you get don't have to have a powerful laptop to do this, so either a cheap one or an old one, and stick a version of Linux on it, which is an open source piece of software, so something like Ubuntu. So there are various versions of or incarnations of Linux. Ubuntu is quite a good one. Mint is another one. So you could get a secondhand laptop if you wanted, for, you know, cheaply, that might be too slow to run the current version of Windows, but then stick Ubuntu on it if you're skilled enough. The Chromebooks are nice because they're very low maintenance, because you're not really storing any programs on your internal drive. You don't have to update them and you know, scan them and all the time and all of that. It would just run. But be aware, it's a Google product, so they'll know everything about everything that you do on that device. Don't expect privacy.
Okay. Another text from, they've not left their name actually. They say, any idea why I can't send emojis by text? No problem when using a messenger. The recipient just receives a question mark. And then the texter says, I will close this text with a happy face. And sure
Except
enough,
what do we see?
Two question marks. It is strange, yeah. Isn't it? Because that happens to my dad. He can send messages with emojis in WhatsApp, but when he tries to use text, it's just...
Yeah. Okay, so when we send text messages and we use, you know, normal characters to form words, the number relating to each character is not only understood by our machine, but is standard across all the different manufacturers' devices, because otherwise text messages just wouldn't work. The problem with emojis is that they were sort of strapped on afterwards, and there isn't complete agreement on this code means this emoji, and sometimes it's not recognized as an emoji at all, which is why you start getting sort of characters that say like question mark, don't know what this is, or some random characters. Yeah. So that's the reason why it works within apps is because both parties are using the same messaging app, and therefore the emojis are understood by sender and recipient alike.
Yeah, my father-in-law can't receive emojis at all, so if I didn't realize that at first, so when I was if I text him I might send a few emojis, and he ended up calling me and saying, Faye, why, when you send me a text, why do I get a whole list of alien faces? And that's all he gets. He gets alien faces instead of the emojis that I'm sending. I think he must have wondered what I was trying to say.
Yeah, and the irony is there is an emoji for an alien face. You can just send him a proper one. But yeah, no, so that's the reason, and they kind of need to get their act together. Funny, emojis are this whole big subject now where there's arguments about which emojis should be included and what they should look like, and do they represent diverse faces and all the rest of it. So you now get, for example, on Apple, you get versions with different skin colors, gradations of skin color, as well as gender for each emoji, which is, I guess, a good thing. But it just adds to the problems technologically, I suppose.
Fevzi, as ever, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I'm going to finish on this text just to let you know how much we appreciate you. Michael in Bromley says, please, could we have the technology program on every week?
Oh, bless.
That's nice.
Well, I have
isn't
to
it?
Sleep occasionally. But
yeah.
Thank you.
That is a problem, yeah. Okay, you go and get some sleep. Thank you so much for talking to us, and we will speak to you again in a few weeks' time.
All right, cheers. On digital and online. This is BBC Radio 5 Live. bbc.co.uk/5live.